So just a summary. Turn the microphone on. A summary of what I was doing in the previous two lectures. So in lecture one, we talked about the idea of having this solution psi tilde, which is where you're specifying each point on some bit of a manifold, the values of the fields, the metric and the matter fields. And then this bit of manifold maps into some region of operational space A and gives rise to this gamma set. Okay. And then you can take the set formed of all diffeomorphisms of this, because these are all physically equivalent. And this is now called this is psi A, and this corresponds to the actual situation, the kind of bubbles inside region A. These manifolds belong to chartable space associated. So for each region that we consider, we associate a separate chartable space. And so any manifold is a subset of the points in the chartable space. So this gives us a way of looking at all different manifolds that might end up mapping into this region. There's this important bit of machinery, this fiducial identity map that takes you from the chartable space associated with region A to the one associated with region B. So it's just a natural way of identifying points between these spaces. This will be useful in today's lecture when we're looking at how to join solutions. And so you want to associate points on the boundary between these two different solutions. Then in lecture two, we looked at the we defined a notion of restriction. So this is where you have some region B of operational space, which is inside region A, and then how you get from a solution associated with region A to the restricted one associated with region B. It performs a similar role to trace in quantum theory. We also looked at sets of solutions. So the set of solutions omega spec is a set of solutions which are in accord with the specification. And there's four possibilities here. So the default one is actual pure solutions. This is where, in this case, we don't write the spec. We just write omega. And then the other cases are, there's four cases here. Actual solutions are ones that satisfy the field equations. The candidate solutions are just ones that don't have to satisfy the field equations, but they're sufficiently smooth. Pure solutions are ones that have this form, where every element is diffeomorphism related to every other one. So they're all the elements are physically equivalent. Mixed solutions are ones that can be written as the union of distinct solutions. So they would be written as the union of a number of different pure solutions. Define the sort operation. So if you have a solution here, which may be mixed, the sort operation returns a list of the pure solutions whose union gives you back the solution you started with. And then the flatten operation is the inverse of the sort operation. Actually, this is an operation you'll find in set theory anyway. It's just where you, if you have a set of sets, you just take the union of the elements of all those sets. So this is just a standard operation in set theory. Okay. Then we defined a bunch of special solutions. There's one special solution I forgot to give you last week. I'll mention that on the next board. So the empty solution is the solution you'll get if there are no points on your manifold that map into the region of operational space that you're interested in. So this is just given by the empty set. So here, if this is empty, then you'll have no points like this. And then if you represent this as psi rather than psi tilde, then it's the set whose only member is the empty set. Okay. The null solution corresponds to the logical proposition that's always false. And this is just when you have psi being equal to the empty set. So you can see there's no solutions in here at all. So obviously this can't happen. It's useful to have the null proposition. Maybe I should over here. The deterministic, this is the deterministic solution for region A. And this consists of the set, this consists of the union of all solutions that are possible in that set. Okay. So if you flatten out all actual pure solutions, say the union of all actual pure solutions, you'll get what I call the deterministic solution. And this is something which is always true. It's always true that something happens in there. Don't forget this includes the empty solution as a possibility. So something will always happen even if it's nothing. Okay, and then we have two more special solutions. The given gamma solutions, so these are ones. This is the set, so this is the union of all solutions. Psi A is the set of all psi tilde A's, which map to this given gamma A. So this may be pure or it may be mixed. If there are physically inequivalent solutions that map to this gamma A, then it will be mixed. And then one more notion is you may be interested in some level of coarse graining. So you have a set OA of different possible gamma A's. Living in here, you may have different gamma A's. And then you can just take the union of all the solutions consistent with each of the gammas. Okay. So I was really trying to set up last week a lot of the machinery which is analogous to machinery that you have in quantum theory. Certainly the sort of quantum theory that's used in quantum information. Are there any questions on this before I carry on?
Why do you call it sort?
Well, it's like as if you go through and you sort the solutions into ones that are physically inequivalent.
Right.
Okay. So you're going through because that's just, you're just sorting into the solutions that are physically inequivalent, yeah. Which would be a difficult thing to do on a computer, because it's difficult to test for physical equivalence. Okay. Any more questions before I... So I started talking about composition last week. The idea is you have two regions. Operational space. Which share some surface in common. Here's region A. Doesn't really matter. Here's region B. And then this surface in common here, I'm going to call small a. This is in, like I said, / math SF font. We can imagine we have in each of these regions some solution, psi A, which may be mixed in general, and psi B. We're going to take them to be actual solutions, so maybe I should put actual. Solutions of the field equations. So if we assume, the problem we want to solve is if we assume that these are actual solutions of the field equations, Can we join them together with appropriate boundary conditions so that we get something which is an actual solution for the composite region? So we define this double cup operation with the subscript A. Like this. So this is the double cup is the set formed from all unions of the members of psi A and psi B, except that it was also this subscript A. What that means is that we only keep these unions when the boundary conditions match. Let me write that here. If they don't match, we just use the null element. The null element is the element which, if that's just the empty set. So if you add the null element to a set, you don't change it. Okay. So I need to define this operation a little more carefully. And that's the main thing we're going to be concerned with. Today, because we need to say what we mean by matching. We need to make sense. So this is, I put inverted commas around here because it's slightly more subtle than I've indicated. Is any questions at this stage? Okay. So this thing here, this thing represented by a small sans serif A, is something I'll call it a typing surface. So typing surfaces are represented by a... It's my best attempt to do a sans serif B. And it's when you have, well, I guess I don't need to write it down again. It's this picture here, except that actually I want to convey two pieces of information here. I want to talk about the set of points. Yes. So the set of points associated with the typing surface A is the set of points here that live at this boundary, but I also want to convey some more information. So A is equal to so it has two components. It's equal to the set of points that live on the boundary, and then also I want to insert a coordinate system in there as well. I'll explain what I mean by that. So the coordinate system associated with a typing surface is given by specifying a bunch of scalars running from which are labeled by L equals 0 to k minus 1. This is a different L, incidentally, from the one I just had on the blackboard previously. So these are scalars in operational space. And then furthermore, we want to orient the L equals 0 scalar so it's pointing out of the surface. And all the other scalars should be pointing in the surface. So what I mean by that is, let me just draw a diagram, perhaps it's good. So here's the 0 scalar, and that's pointing out of the surface. Then you have the other ones, the x1, x2, and so on, and they live inside the surface. Because this is pointing out of the surface, if you take the points in operational space, which are such that this is equal to 0, then that defines, is an equation for the set of points that you're interested in. Of course, to fully define the set of points, you also need some inequalities that tell you where the boundaries are. But this gives you a surface going through that set. Is this clear?
Is this like an adapted frame or something?
I suppose for every typing surface, you'll have a different frame of reference, different frame. So in that sense, it's adaptive. So this is, when you define a typing surface A, you have to give not just a set of points that live in it, but also some coordinate system that has this property that the zero coordinates sticks out. This is defined for individual solutions with the tilde on top.
Yeah. So like it wouldn't make sense to say psi A union A.
No. Then you need the double cup.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You drew the rest of the scalars as being tangent to the surface.
Yeah.
Is this something that you want?
Sorry? That's something you want, yeah.
Do you want do you want them to be all orthogonal, or?
I don't think you care if they're orthogonal or not. No.
You just want them to be tangent.
You want them to be tangent and a spanning set. So that inside this surface, this set of scalars distinguish the points. So the reason for defining one of them sticking out is that I want to associate a direction with the surface. And so this provides a direction. So
I need to say which way it sticks out?
Yeah, whether it's on this side or that side, yeah. So
when you glue them,
you want the directions to be aligned. And so and it's useful because when you glue them, if you look at this picture here, the direction, if we associate a direction with this, and it's pointing out on this one, it's pointing out of region B, and this one is going to be pointing into region A. Yeah, and we'll use indices. This is just a peek ahead. We'll use indices so that when it's pointing out of the enclosed region, we'll have a subscript. When it's pointing into the enclosed region, we'll have a superscript. When it's pointing into the enclosed region, we'll have a subscript. And this will naturally ensure that they're aligned. Okay, so that's for a later lecture. So the direction. It just indicates the side. The side in which that zero coordinate increases. So one useful operation is the reverse operation. So if you take a typing surface and you apply this operation, then you just get this the same thing, except you reverse. You reverse just the zero coordinate. So you replace I'm not sure if you can see here, can you? So all you do is you replace x zero by minus x zero. Okay. Any questions on that?
Is there an intuition for the name typing?
Yeah, it's sort of. It comes from computer science, where they use these kinds of notions. You know, like if you have boxes and you want to join them together and make sure that they match up. And they talk about types, you know, matching types. So I've borrowed that term from computer science, perhaps without being terribly aware of how they would use it precisely in computer science, but I think it's the right sort of idea. Any more questions?
Yeah. The scalars that you define are the x to be defined on the whole original space?
They have to be defined on just on this surface. When I suppose any expression you write down, they will be functions of S. And so that will define them over the whole surface. But you do require on that surface that they distinguish the points. So
some open neighborhood, maybe.
You kind of, well, I guess we'll see why you need this coordinate system, but when you're matching solutions, they need to talk a bit to operational space so they kind of know where they are. So we'll need these coordinate systems to be embedded in the typing surfaces. Okay. So,
so these are for services. There's also all my manifold are next to each other, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. When your manifolds will typically generically meet on either side of the surface.
So, what if I have two regions in my manifolds?
Yeah.
that are disjoint.
Yeah. They don't touch the surface.
They don't touch the surface.
Yeah.
Do you have some conditions to tell whether
Whether they, so what they'll be doing is they'll induce the empty boundary condition, which will come later. Just like we had the empty solutions, which has no points in it. Likewise, if the solutions don't touch this typing surface, it'll induce the empty boundary conditions in there, and I'll show you what that is later. And if you induce the empty boundary conditions on both sides of the surface, then that's actually a match. Nothing is equal to nothing, so to speak. So that'll come later. Yeah. Okay.
So these are, we're composing regions in off space, right?
That's right, yeah.
So conceivably you could have regions that are disjointed in the manifold.
Off space as well, yeah. Oh, in the manifold, yeah.
Not disjointed off space, though.
Absolutely, yeah. That can happen. In that case, you have exactly what the features just said. Okay. So I want to join. Did I write? You just write it down to make it concrete. I want to join. I want to join this and this. This manifold here is a subset of a chartable space associated with region A. This one is a subset of a chartable space associated with region B. So when we try to join these together, there's sort of two stages to the process. The first stage is where you check to see that this manifold matches up with this manifold. Okay, and I call that the architecture. So I want to see if this matches. Matches this, and we want to do this under the fiducial identity map. We want to see if they match up in such a way that they form a new manifold. So that's the first thing. And then the second condition, which I call the wallpaper, is to see if the fields so you only check the second condition if the first condition is true, is to see if the field match up. Because we're interested in checking to see if we have a new solution, we'll also want some number of the derivatives. So pi is a list of derivatives of these fields here. And I'm not going to give an actual suggestion as to what this list of derivatives should be. But I'll suggest that the list should be a finite list. Yeah, so the reason for calling this architecture and wallpaper is, you know, if you're joining two buildings and then later on you're going to put wallpaper across them, first of all, you want to be sure that the two buildings are actually aligned, just like when this building was joined to the old part of the building. And then if they are aligned, then it's possible to put some wallpaper across. It took me a while to realize that this was an important step.
It stops you from just asking it's the solution for the global, for the joint.
I think we are asking that.
It's a solution, right? I mean, you might just have a trivial split of your system and have two local solutions which match on all the derivatives, and it does not give you a solution.
Yeah, so the claim is going to be that if this is a solution, and this is a solution, and if appropriate matching conditions are satisfied on the boundary, then the thing you have is also a solution.
Okay.
And that's because you have local field equations. If you didn't have local field equations, that would be a good assumption.
Sorry.
Right. Sorry. I'm simply going to assume that is the case without justifying that, but it is something that could do more. I mean, if it were the case that this is a solution, if you have this is a solution, and on the boundary the fields match and all derivatives of the fields match, then it would also be a joint solution because it would satisfy the field equations everywhere, including on the boundary. But the real question is whether you can have some finite subset of the derivatives and still have that property. Then that should be enough. That's the vacuum. If you have matter fields, then you can worry about that.
So just vacuum, If you have matter fields, you have to worry about those.
Okay.
So you only need one derivative.
Right.
Just here.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just to say that they have to match. Why is this better to find it in this complicated way than just saying that?
Well, I think it's because I'm trying to do it in operational space. I'm trying to map these conditions into operational space as they live on this surface between different regions. Other than that, I'm not doing anything complicated. This adds a level of
Because you only want abstract. Only want to consider the surface alone.
So that I am just doing that. It's not complicated. Okay. Let's see, what should I use? So first of all, we want to see if the manifolds match, if they meet up. So remember, I associate a different chartable space with each of the regions of operational space I'm interested in. And now, just because we've already been quite extravagant, I'm going to be even more extravagant and associate a different chartable space for each of the typing surfaces that we're interested in as well. The reason for that is now we can, at each typing surface, we can map our boundary conditions into that chartable space. And then we can proceed in a more symmetric way. So we define this is four. So I'm going to do that thing I said about chartable spaces. First of all, I'm going to define this object. So this is basically going to be the collection of all the points in the solution psi A that live on the typing surface. Is that clear? And this is all the points on the manifold MA live that correspond to the typing surface. And now I want to map this into a new chartable space. So map it into this space. In this notation, the last letter indicates the chartable space. So I've taken the set of points that live on the typing surface from that solution up there. Now I've mapped them into a new dedicated chartable space for this typing surface. Is that clear? Is it so clear no one's asking a question, or is it so obscure no one's asking a question?
I lost a picture.
Okay, thanks, Tua. Thanks for being on. If you remember, we have this map. That I talked about in lecture one, and I summarized at the beginning of lecture two, where we can map between chartable spaces. And the main point here is that you have the same numerical values for the coordinates. So this just gives us a way of comparing between these different chartable spaces. Okay. We're going to want to check a matching condition. You guys should. At this point here, where these two boundaries meet in the typing surface. Okay. And we have one option would just be to check that this set of points matches this set of points under a map directly between them, like that. But it's so because this one here lives in these live in WA, this one's live in WB. So when we check they're the same, we have to use some map between them. And it's got to be that fiducial identity map. But a more symmetric way to do this is instead to map these ones into a new space associated with the typing surface. Just a space, subsets of which can be manifolds or part of things like this. So then to check the condition, we just check that this one and this one both map into the same thing here. No? Does anyone think they understand what I'm saying? Okay, maybe you can say it in different ways.
I don't think I can explain it any better. But to be honest, what I'm really struggling here with all this is the need for all these different chartable spaces.
So the reason for that is if you could just work in one chartable space for everything. But then you don't have local control. This, I said this in the first lecture. You don't have local control over the manifolds wrapping back into themselves.
But I don't see where that gets resolved in all this.
Well, because they live in different spaces, maybe you'll see that then they won't map into each other because you'll just have identification between at the boundaries. So you identify points at the boundaries, but they won't wrap into each other. Okay. I'll say it one more time. So we have a set of points here for this manifold. that are associated with the boundary, that live in the map into the typing surface. And those points are a subset of chartable space WA. We're going to have a similar set of points starting with psi tilde B, and we have a B here. They'll map into, they'll be a subset of the points in WB. Now we want to see if they match up at the boundary or not. And the way I'm choosing to do that is to map them both into a third chartable space, which is associated with the typing surface, and then to see if you get the same set. So if, yeah.
Sorry, are you expecting those sets to be manifolds in principle?
Well, they.
I mean, by end that you're consistently calling the set points.
Yeah, they're. I mean, they're. They may not be manifolds. They're. Because they. I mean, you've taken a part of a manifold, so they're a subset of points from a manifold, chosen according to some particular criteria. They have to map into this space here. Were you here in lecture?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, so it's a way of chartable is a way of covering these things with coordinates. I sort of set it up in the.
It's normally notched from
yeah. Yeah, so I've sort of taken this sort of notion that you have a set of charts that cover a single manifold, and expanded it into a notion that you have a set of charts that cover. Any of the manifolds that you might want to use, because then you have a space, and you can take subsets of that space, which are different manifolds.
Any subset is chartable, right?
Yes, any subset of points in a chartable space is chartable, but not necessarily a manifold. So.
It's like a space of all types.
Yeah, it's a very big place, but. I think I'd have to go through that whole thing again. So maybe I can tell you about it afterwards if you're interested. Yeah. Okay. So I think I've made the point clearly now. We'll see. Okay. So you can do exactly the same thing for tilde B. You get this. So you go through the same steps here. And then the condition we have for matching is that the set of points we get from psi tilde A should be the same as the set of points we get from psi tilde B. Perhaps I should put here psi tilde A. Okay. And if that's the case, then you'll have the same coordinates when you map into this. When you map into the actual chart, you'll have the same coordinates living across this boundary. That's a sort of just not a that's a necessary condition, not a sufficient condition for the two things to constitute manifold.
So that's the architecture condition.
That's the architecture. So at least the buildings match up. But now you want to impose two more conditions. Let me go here.
Lucien, what do you mean by this notation with the big line?
So when I calculated this set of points here, I had to use a particular solution, psi A, because the way I did it was, you know, you look at a point P in the solution there, you look at the fields phi, then you calculate S, then you see if S is in this set, and if it is, you keep it. So to calculate this, you need your psi tilde A.
Like denoting that,
yeah,
depends on the solution.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is sort of a typical matching kind of condition. You've got something on one side being equal to something on the other side. What we're going to do is we'll identify points. So as you go along this boundary, we'll identify the point P in here with the corresponding point under this fiducial identity map. So if we get this matching condition satisfied, then we'll identify the appropriate points. This is a typical move in differential geometry manifold theory. People identify points at boundaries. So we need two more conditions. Because at this stage, we've just identified points, but we don't know that we have a manifold over the joint region. We don't know that this thing in the picture here is a part of a manifold. So we need one thing we want to be sure doesn't happen is that it goes back on itself. Let me try and draw that. It could be that this is region A. This is manifold A, this is B. It could be that they meet perfectly, but they sort of go back on themselves. Okay, and that wouldn't be very useful. So I impose a direction condition. And this is where those coordinates we introduced will come in handy. So we want to impose the condition that these scalar fields that we use as coordinates in the typing surface match as we go across. So I'm going over this a bit fast because it would take me a long time to explain exactly what I mean here. But the key point is to stop having this sort of double back effect, to make sure that what actually happens is that in open regions around the manifold you can have a set of coordinates that go across and continue in the same direction.
So, but why are you not interested in these kind of?
Which have this, I mean this wouldn't be a manifold. You wouldn't have a smooth joint across.
But if these are subregions of my manifold, right? So.
Okay. They're supposed to be well behaved in the sense that they're just picked out by boundary conditions that they live inside certain regions of operational space. So if you take a solution over the entire universe and then just pick out the solution that pertains to a certain region of operational space, it shouldn't have this kind of feature. And then the last condition, just for the architecture, is a smoothness condition. And here I'm not going to write down what the condition is, just say what it is. So the idea is, as you go across here, remember when we define a manifold, we have three conditions. And the third condition is that you have a certain smoothness property where the charts overlap. So if you're sticking together two bits of a manifold, you want to be sure that you have the appropriate smoothness condition between those bits. Otherwise, there's no chance of this thing being a manifold when you... there's no chance of this coming from a manifold. So I won't write down that condition in detail. If all these conditions are met, we'll say that this is the resulting manifold. I'm using the word manifold really to mean something like a manifold picked out by region of operational space. So as long as all these conditions are met, that they identify appropriately, that they the direction continues across the manifold, and that you have an appropriate smoothness conditions, then this thing will also be a manifold on which a solution can live. Okay. Are there any questions on this?
So you say that this new manifold have a region of op space assigned to it.
Yeah. So this will map into A union B. Oh, are you saying this will have a new region of like a new chartable space or new?
Sure.
So this will map. If you take that solution, this solution as living on this manifold. When we join them together using this union operation, then it will map into A union B. There's a bit more to be said about the chartable space associated with this. So I haven't really gotten to the actual boundary conditions yet. This is just the sort of, this is the architecture, then there's still the wallpaper, and then there's a bit more to be said. The whole thing, I mean, to extract conditions that you can talk about living on this typing surface, you have to do a certain amount of background work. And so I've done about half of it, and I was hoping to do all of it in this lecture, but I'll carry on next week and show you how that works. Any more questions here? So next week there's a colloquium at this time on Monday at 2:00. I think it's a colloquium that'll be interesting to many people. It's someone coming from Lisa or one of his experiments. That does mean that the Wednesday at 2:00 slot is free. Does that work for people here? Okay, if you're not. Okay, so I'll reschedule the meeting to Wednesday at 2:00 and I'll send an email out. Okay.